Hey, friends and listeners around the world. Welcome back to Beneath the Surface. I'm so glad to be back, and I'm excited for this show. It's my pleasure to announce my guest, Ms. Judy Gaddis, will be at long last be with joining us in a few minutes. But there are a few things I quickly want to get to. Firstly, to the honchos who run Critical Mass, I'm happy to inform them that despite all their best efforts to disrupt my show and Judy Gaddis to have a platform to speak, well, your failure is met with immense satisfaction. Also, there's one bit of quick news I want to share with you folks. Anthony Fauci and other members of the National Health Institute has come under fire from certain members of the United States Congress for their possible role in the original spread of coronavirus. The term gain of function has been brought up, which upon fact-checking, basically means for-profit testing and research. Now, this quote, gain of function research, may very well have taken place at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China. That very important bit of news is definitely worth discussing more in depth at a later time. You can actually find a editorial on that on dangerousglobe.com. One more thing I do want to say before Judy joins me is how sad and unfortunate it is that racism not only still exists, but how this generation of African Americans, like those before, still have to be victimized by bigotry and prejudice of the highest order. Some of the shit I heard Ms. Gaddis have to deal with over the last 6 months or so is despicable. And for those same people to try and deny her freedom of speech and expression is beyond insulting. There have been some other instances of rather juicy news events that have happened around the world, but we'll surely get to that perhaps next week. And also, time permitting, we'll announce our special monthly award towards the end of the show. Now, without further ado, she's a writer and inspiring filmmaker, among other things. Her site is judygaddis.com, where you can find her blog, Much Jude About Nothing. Thrilled to introduce Ms. Judy Gaddis, and how are you feeling on this weekend?
Hi, Robert. It's really good to join you finally. I know we've been trying to get this together, but yeah, it's great to be finally on.
Great. Quickly, I just wanted to ask, for some of our listeners in the U.S. and other places around the world who may not be so aware of you, would you care to introduce yourself and a little bit of what you're about?
Yeah, so I'm a filmmaker and a playwright. I'm usually focused on historical stories. I also write fiction as well. But yeah, for the last few years, I've really been looking at historical figures, particularly black female figures from the UK and the USA, and very interested in how we can actually learn to go on to create an art industry and an entertainment industry that's actually more beneficial to the black people who put so much talent, energy and effort into it. So I'm really interested in looking at the history of entertainment and seeing how we can kind of take the messages and learn the lessons of the past.
That's fantastic, Judy. I'm actually into the whole, I've dabbled with, fictional avenues of creativity, but let me just say something before we go any further. I just really wanted to apologize to you properly on the air for originally succumbing to the pressures from a certain group to not have you on several weeks back. It's no excuse for my failure not to stand up for what's right. But my question to you, Judy, is how should we handle people like Rachel Swindon, Dave Middleton, and some of the others on social media when they speak for the so-called left, but are so incredibly clueless when it comes to systemic racism?
I think we should handle them in exactly the same way that we handle anybody else that is racist or assists racist or ignores racism. Identifying as left-wing isn't some kind of a shield that you can hide behind. It's not a kind of protect-all to say, oh, because I want fairer politics, I want a better deal for the working class. Doesn't necessarily mean that you've done any kind of work on yourself to be a better person. And by better person, you know, what are you doing to end racism? People are always pushing out this idea that, you know, they have to tackle racism, and racism is this external thing that they don't take part in themselves. And it's not, it's something that even, you know, black and people of colour have to undo the teachings of white supremacy that we all, you know, we all absorb when we live in white supremacist countries. So yeah, right. For us, it's really hard for us to deal with them. We can only have zero tolerance. They need to deal with themselves. They need to deal with their own internalized bias that is refusing them to rather address the issues, the accusations that, you know, people in your ranks have been racist, rather than you do this whole cover-up, smear dozens of black people, end up in a situation where we've been threatened, where we've been called the N-word and much worse, even, you know, threatened with sexual violence, or allegedly threatened with sexual violence, and in the very least, been spoken to on an almost daily basis in really sexually violent terms. So, you know, if they're not prepared to challenge these behaviours in their own midst, then who are they to demand anything of the right wing?
I agree. You know, Judy, I agree. And, you know, for me personally, like, I was on the threshold of almost, like, joining this this madness, this group that, you know, I wrote one article for. And I'm just glad it was brought to light to me, where I wasn't sucked into that whole, you know, left-wing thing, but, you know, being so clueless on racism and having, you know, your so-called social media trolls out there, you know, because, you know, shortly after the original cancellation of this, you know, I was being attacked when I actually decided that I was wrong for my original, action of not having you on the show. So, you know, it's just, but I mean, I was never a victim, obviously, of racism, so I can't really say much about that. But there was one thing I want to say that I really love about your writing. It's like, it's very sarcastic, and I really dig that you use that ability to stand up to bigotry. And sometimes I worry, do you think folks may focus more on, like, the controversy sometimes you face, which is really no fault of your own, as opposed to, like, your writing talent and your filmmaking talents?
So it's very hard to get, I'm not on Twitter as a writer, I'm on Twitter as me, as a mum, someone, just a regular person who was going through the pandemic, isolated, and actually just went on there to have a look and keep up to date with COVID-19. So my writing is very separate, and it's very niche as well. So, as much as other people enjoy my writing, I write for the black community. I write work that will promote local artists, create local conversations. I'm not pushing into the mainstream or anything like that. I'm not trying to achieve that. So my work goes on completely apart from everything that is going on Twitter. So it's not diminishing my voice in that respect, but what it is doing, and you know, I have absolutely no regrets about that, is it's giving me a voice so that other people can really understand what is happening here. And what's happening is that anti-racism has been co-opted by white liberals. And they've taken our struggle and they're diluting it. And then they're changing the terms of engagement so that you know, you don't have to work as hard to be an anti-racist. You don't have to lift to the standards that actually black academics, black feminists have lived to for years and have been telling people that they need to believe in to for years. They want this kind of easy, insta anti-racism that, you know, doesn't require anything of them other than sharing things and, you know, banging their drums. But, you know, it's much deeper than that. You have to ask yourself questions all the time. And you have to be willing to be questioned, because you're just not born. Well, you may be born this way. You may be born not racist. But, you know, by the time you've been through school and the rest of it, you've absorbed this bias. And if, you know, if you're serious, you need to start doing some work about it. And don't put yourself on this pedestal until even when you've done the work, you know, from the minute you start saying, I'm a great anti-racist, you can't ask me anything, anti-racism is over here. From the minute you start saying things like that, you're centering yourself in someone else's struggle. You're not going to be killed because of the colour of your skin. And I'm saying that to people like Rachel Swindon and Louise Raw. You know, they brag that they've got police presence. You know, not police presence. They brag that their workers, anti-fascists, have, you know, so that they have they're on record with the police as at risk and they'll get a fast response. We don't get any of that. We walk around at risk every day, yeah? You don't see any black activists getting that kind of attention.
No, you don't. And, you know what, I was actually going to ask you about that Louise Wolf, I guess, author or whatever. But, you know, you explained her a bit. Now, I just wanted to ask more of a question about, see, here in the United States, like, the racism's kind of like, it's so, like, up right up in everybody's face with the, especially with, you know, the justice system, the prison system, especially with, you know, the police, you know, killing minorities. And I was just wondering out there, you know, for our U.S. listeners, how is the policing and the community and the, you know, the black community, how is it there? I mean, I know they don't have as many guns, obviously they don't have much guns there, but I mean, can you see institutional racism from the, like from the police and the justice system in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, so it's a very similar ideology. The difference is that America's policing system was born out of slave patrols. It's very deeply woven with African American oppression. Now, the policing system is ridiculously racist here, but it would have always been founded on them principles, but, you know, they weren't chasing slaves. What the British policing system was there to protect the private property of rich people from poor people who were living in, you know, really intense poverty in those days. So while our police don't have guns, they still have this ideology of the, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia, you know, all the kind of things that you really don't want to find in a police force are there for all to see. But yeah, America has a very different history. I think but the symptoms of the racism that we all experienced are very much the same. The school to prison pipeline, school exclusions, stop and search for black youth,
yes,
violence, that kind of thing. You know, these are all symptoms of white supremacy, and you know, whether we're in the UK, the USA, or even in nations where they are now majority black nations, and there's no white government maintaining the oppression. It's the kind of oppression that unless real steps are taken to redress the causes, the root causes, it's the kind of oppression that no longer needs the oppressors to be in place for it to continue.
Right. That's a fantastic answer. Actually, I did want to ask a bit, like, with Louise Raw especially, what did, like, and some of the others, what did they say that originally got, like, so many people, you know, obviously yourself included, so upset, like, what was the original, what sparked that? I know it's different, but...
The whole issue started when I challenged a white socialist account. I think it's got about 30,000 followers, bearing in mind at the time, I think I had about 15,000 followers. And he had made comments about black youths and stereotyping them as knife criminals. So I just was like, you know, what the hell is this? This is not kind of, you know, this is right-wing rhetoric. And from there, people kind of lined up to defend him and accuse me of bullying him for pointing this out. And what happened was these guys who claim that they're anti-fascists, they came and called us liars, called us nonces. I don't know if you know that what that means in the USA, but it basically means pedophiles.
That's another word.
And yeah, we're calling us all kinds of really crude ableist slurs as well. And just saying that we're attention seeking and there's no racism. And in the middle of this argument, one of the so-called anti-fascists who uses a monkey avatar started using banana emojis. And obviously this was, taken offensively by the black people present. And we call them racist. So they sent more banana emojis and they'd make pictures of me surrounded with banana emojis. And like over the course of the last 7-8 months, like thousands probably of banana emojis and memes and pictures have been sent in relation to this situation. And so Louise Raw came on to say that the people who were sending these bananas were good anti-fascists and, you know, we were mistaken. And obviously we've had to come from her. And instead of saying, okay, yeah, these people are wrong, they shouldn't be using ableist language, they've actually gone on to use N-words, threaten lynchings, threaten to have my child taken by the state.
Wait, themselves left-wing, right?
Sorry?
Leftists, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, that's just amazing.
So Louise Raw is still... standing with these people. She refuses to condemn these people. This week, there were allegations that one of the guys that have been taking part in these attacks against myself and several other black women and a number of men as well, there were allegations that he'd threatened to sexually assault me. Some evidence of other sexually violent comments that he'd been making in private was released and it was shared on Twitter. I'm not sure if you saw it, but it was really graphic, horrific stuff. And the lady who shared it was announced dead by the guy who made the comments the next day. Now, I know that sounds wild because it is wild. Nobody's died. This is just part of their game. It's not a game. It's disturbing behavior for grown adults. For anybody, you know, it's disturbing behavior. But yeah, so this, just because people didn't want to speak up, just because people didn't want to challenge their friends and just say, you know what, just say sorry. Just say, we got this wrong. Because no one was prepared to do that. Now, we've got people faking their deaths or people faking other people's deaths and threats of sexual violence. And it's Black History Month here in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. And, Black History Month, yeah. Was in the UK.
And the focus of socialist Twitter on for Black History Month is demonizing and smearing Black victims of racism, and they're actually utilizing Black History Month to do that. You know, they're rather than listening to Black people for Black History Month, they're actually calling Black people fascists.
Yeah. So, Judy, hey, listen, since you're here, and since the winner of this award is actually one of those clueless folks, I just, while you were here, I wanted to announce our monthly Gentle Rambler, Douchebag of the Month Award. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So this month, we have three nominees, so we're going to get right to the results here. Combined with Facebook's, we actually had our largest turnout. So, let's get to the results. Finishing third place with 9% of the vote was Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, a lot of what got him on this list are from allegations of his potential role in COVID. But since he's a cog in the healthcare and pharmaceutical industry that I dislike so much, he certainly made the top three. For now, Mr. Fauci, you're off the hook. Coming in second place, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And for some of you who are not familiar with her, she's a New York congresswoman who, listen, she was a breath of fresh air when she first entered politics. She made the Green New Deal idea and a lot of other really good stuff. What the hell was she thinking showing up to the Met Gala in New York City, which is a place for billionaires to show off mostly hideous dresses, with the Tax the Rich gown on? I dig the message, but what a poor choice of venue to try to get such a point across. And her excuse just made it worse. She finished with 18% of the vote. Now, the winner of the Douchebag of the Month for September, with 62% of the vote, is Dave Middleton. Those who know him, they're probably better off. And as Judy knows, just as many of you out there know a phony when you see one. His attempts to damage his show's credibility, his connections with known racially insensitive writers — I use the term a writer loosely, I just want to congratulate Dave Middleton, you are the Douchebag of the Month for September. So, yeah, I want to get that in there because, you know, it's the beginning of October. And, you know, actually, I got a really large amount of, you know, votes for that one. Usually, just in the 50 range.
He's a massive dickhead, but I don't know, did he outdo the Met Gala stunt, really? I don't know.
I don't know. So. Yeah, and one quick thing, Judy, also, I think it's a mutual friend of ours. Her name is Diana, and she did write a little message. I do this thing with it's called the Listener of the Week, and I just wanted to let her know that she is the Listener of the Week. We're a little bit up against time, but I'm going to read her statement on the next show. And Diana out there, I'm sorry I didn't have time to do that.
Oh, yay. I would have liked that. I like Diana.
Much-deserved Listener of the Week. We do that every week here on this show. So Diana is a wonderful, wonderful lady, and I will get to her message next week. So anyway, back to it. We got about 5 minutes left. So, I mean, I'm just so glad that you forgave me originally for, like I said, succumbing to nonsense, succumbing to people who tried to give me the wrong information, and me being, you know, you explained it eloquently exactly what went down in the last 6 years.
But you're not the only one, and you know, in your credit, you you released the receipts. We like the receipts, you know, they're always helpful. But you're not alone. And, you know, just last night, I heard about somebody who, you know, has been put in a similar position. And they're not alone either. There's a lot of this going on behind the scenes. There's groups dedicated to us. This, you know, this, they've been doing this for a long time, and they know what to do, and they know how to play on people's vulnerabilities. And, you know, they know how to do it with a smile as well. So, yeah, it's really difficult for people, because nobody should be put in that position. Nobody should be using their Twitter following or their influence in socialism, in, you know, when we're dealing with a democratic process, apparently. Nobody should be acting like Tories, pulling favours, putting pressure on people. That's Tory shit.
Yeah, and you know what? God, there was something I wanted to say about that, but it's like it's more or less you know, modern liberalism. You know, I mean, when I was younger, the term liberalism. First of all, I want to just quickly say this. There's a site out there that I don't know if we mentioned earlier in this interview called Resisting Hate, and they are absolutely bonkers. I mean, I've had a sort of come at me with some of this nonsense, you know, and I just want to say, anybody who may be curious and listening to this from Resisting Hate, just stay away. Just stay away and stop trying to give yourself credibility by, you know, shock value or whatever you want to call it. So I just wanted to bring that up for you, Judy, because I know
And the thing is, you know, they've built themselves up in their own minds to be this, you know, anti-hate group. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, one of them was laughing at someone for being in a wheelchair. Now, they call themselves anti-fascists. We're always fighting the fash. Fash this, fash that. We run fash, we ruin fash. It's all they can talk about. Now, you know, fascism isn't just about skin colour. It's also about sexism, nationalism, and, you know, disability. You know, the first victims under fascism in any kind of group are the disabled people. And for anti-fascists to be using language that hasn't been okay for decades, to be openly mocking disability, to be saying that disabled people shouldn't exist, shouldn't be having children, this is coming straight out of an anti-fascist organisation. Yeah, someone somewhere has got to realise that they've got this twisted.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Over here we blame it on Trump and everything, but I think it's more.
No, it's never been dealt with. It has never, ever been dealt with. You know, the civil rights movement was about creating law and policy that protected people. Yeah, but there has never been any kind of real attempt for white people to re-educate themselves on race, for them to destroy all those racist history books. You know, I'm seeing in America, kids are still going on day trips from school to plantations.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Do you know? Yeah. You know, how can this ever be rectified until people are willing to kind of make these sacrifices, make these sweeping changes? So, you know, as much as we can say there's been progress, there's never been any kind of real global movement to undo these 400 years of rampage around the world. And, you know, it's not just about black people, it's about, you know, colonialism, the damage that is done on a human level, an environmental level, and you know, if you're that way inclined, the spiritual level as well.
Judy, I hate to cut you off, but we got about 5 seconds left. I just want to thank you for coming on. I'll be speaking. No,